The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. It's been a busy summer for Pittsburgh police officers protecting the First Amendment rights of protesters, keeping the peace. That's all in addition to the day-to-day regular duties of officers. Joining us in studio is Scott Schubert, Chief of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police. Scott Schubert, welcome to The Confluence.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So earlier this summer, East Pittsburgh police officer Michael Rossfeld shot and killed an unarmed teenager, 17-year-old Antoine Rose. It wasn't your department. It wasn't your municipality. But you've been involved basically from the beginning. How has it impacted your officers?
Well, I mean, one, you got to look at the incident that occurred. Even though it wasn't in the city of Pittsburgh, we recognize the harm from policing throughout the history of policing. And we kind of expected that it would come to Pittsburgh. And we did everything we could to facilitate peaceful assembly. And one of the things for our officers is it was long events. Some of the
drawn-out marches.
Yeah, that we had, I mean, went hours and not knowing when they were going to go, because sometimes it seemed like daily that they were occurring. And so we always wanted to look out for the welfare of our officers as well to ensure that, you know, emotionally, physically, that they were fine. And so that was probably the biggest thing for the officers was the amount of time on each event.
Right. So what was your approach? What was your directive to your officers?
So the directive was really, you know, knowing what was going on, knowing that emotions were raw and people wanted to, you know, protest what occurred, and giving them that ability to do that peacefully and to protect them, to protect the general public, protect our officers. It was really, let's give them the opportunity to do it. And if they marched, I'm very comfortable with the skills of our motor officers to get people around. And sometimes they're marching for hours. Mm-hmm. You know, if there was a need that they took over an intersection, we would simply shut down streets leading up to it and then try to facilitate traffic around them in a safe manner.
So especially early on, it was sort of let them go as long as they were peaceful?
As long as they were peaceful and in marching, you know, no you know, property to damage the property, nobody getting injured, anything like that. Yeah, that was our thing, was allow them to do it, and let's try to keep everybody safe while they're doing it.
In late July, the city, your department, issued some new restrictions on demonstrations. Take us through an event from the perspective of your command staff. Say your officers arrive at an area such as Smithfield and Boulevard of the Allies downtown, a so-called red zone, and then they see unpermitted demonstrators blocking traffic. What happens?
So the first thing we do, we always assess the situation, what's going on. You always want to try to communicate with the group, try to get somebody to talk to them, and actually get them to move. There's a lot of reasons why we have different intersections that we really don't want blocked, that we can't have blocked for safety reasons. Talk to them and try to get them to keep moving. And if they don't, then we would communicate through alerts that, you know, you have 5 minutes to disperse the area and move.
And what happens after that 5 minutes?
So we give them two warnings, and if they don't, then we would start moving to have them move.
So a 5 minute warning to sort of saying, hey, you can't be doing this. You get 5 minutes, and then you come back and do another 5 minute.
And then we start trying to communicate in between. And the ultimate goal is not to arrest. I mean, we understand that they want to protest whatever cause that they're doing, but we also have to look at the safety of the city as well. And people, you just use the example of Smithfield and Boulevard Yalitz. We have a medic station right there. We can't have medics being held up who are trying to go to priority calls and things like that. But our ultimate goal is not to arrest. It's to facilitate what they're doing, but you know, get them to move as well.
So in essence, the demonstrators are getting at least 10 minutes of unpermitted protesting actually in restricted areas.
That is correct.
Okay. So what have you learned to do or not to do in terms of responding to protesters from maybe earlier police shootings in other cities, such as the police killing of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, which was 4 years ago? What have you learned from that?
So one of the things is we always look at the lessons learned from a lot of different events. Another thing is we were talking before we went on air, being a part of the major city chiefs of police and the International Association Chiefs of Police, you get to talk to people. So you can just pick up a phone and call somebody and say, hey, you experienced this. What did you do? What was the things that you did good? And what are things that you learned from it that you could have done better? And that's very helpful. The key, I believe, is allowing them to facilitate their constitutional rights to protest, but engaging them, communicating with them. You know, trying to set the here's what we can allow happen, and here's things that we can't allow to happen. But the communication is the key. Using a softer approach with your uniform, some of the things learned at other places, militarized vehicles, you know, that they perceive coming up, that has actually caused more conflict between police. My ultimate thing is I don't want my officers hurt, and I don't want the public hurt. So keeping the trying to keep as much back as you can, and you know, then when you need it, you can bring in uniformed officers that may have gear on to help facilitate moving a crowd.
You talked about communicating, engaging. A reporter told me that on the night the demonstration shut down the Parkway East for several hours, that a protester yelled obscenities at a group of young officers standing by. Then hours later, as the demonstration broke up, that same protester, now in a car, stopped to ask those same officers for directions. How do they deal with both?
Well, you have to remain professional. I mean, this is the job we chose to do. It's a noble profession. We're here to make a difference in the lives of others and keep people safe. I mean, I've heard so many horrible things said to our officers during various events, and it's kind of disheartening. But you've got to remain professional, and it's the same thing as if a 911 call comes in. We don't ask who you are; we respond and try to help, and we put our lives on the line for people that we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people recognize police departments as separate entities, or do they see the uniform and the headlines positive or negative and think all police are the same? And how do you counteract any negative association of that?
I would say people look at policing as the profession in general. You know, and we always tell this to our recruits as they come out, when they come onto the department, you know, what any officer does anywhere across the country affects every other officer. So your conduct of what you do can affect an officer 200 miles away. And you have to keep that in mind when you're doing anything. And that's always to do the right thing. It doesn't feel good sometimes when, you're brought into that box. We're all in the same box for the actions of somebody somewhere else. But you understand it happens.
Michael Rosfeld's next scheduled court appearance is September 11th. Are you anticipating future demonstrations, say, outside the county courthouse as Rosfeld's case continues? How are you going to handle it?
So we always look at how things are going. We try to see what the feel is. Social media provides a lot of information. Like I said before, communicating with the organizers of it. And if they go down to the courthouse, we do as we've done in the past, and that's give them the opportunity, their First Amendment right for peaceful assembly, to do it and evaluate, communicate, and de-escalate.
Will you have your officers on extended tours those days?
No, it just all depends on what information is, you know, we come up with. And as that occurs, then we'll make a determination whether we need additional resources or just resources that we have on duty.
So what message do you have to the officers, to the public that might be a bit exhausted or maybe hurting as the summer draws to a close?
Well, to the officers, one, a big thanks to them for their professionalism throughout all of this, you know. And, I mean, they do a great job. They come out and do what's expected of them. And to the you know, general public, when there's protests going on, have some patience. We'll try to get people around and keep people safe. And, you know, to the protesters, people are out there protesting. You know, we just ask that, you know, that there's no civil disobedience as far as property damage or hurting people. We want people to express their First Amendment rights.
We have just about 30 seconds left, Chief. So beyond their official duties, how do you encourage officers to get involved in the community? Events they don't even get paid for, maybe a fun run, maybe Special Olympics?
It's becoming a part of, we're all part of the community. And the more that we can get to know the community, so people don't look at the uniform and the badge, they look at the person. And on the police side, we don't look at somebody as a witness or a victim or an actor, we see them as a person. And I think that's through building that trust and relationship in the community.
It's an ongoing process, though.
Always, always.
Scott Schubert is the chief of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police. Scott Schubert, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.